As New South Wales embarks on its so-called Freedom Day, Victoria continues to see daily case numbers totalling more than 1,600. Fully vaccinated people in that state are now enjoying a swathe of new freedoms after enduring a 107-day lockdown. A short time ago, I spoke with the Victorian Senator and Minister for Women's Economic Security, Jane Hume, and I started by asking her whether she was worried about the number of COVID cases in Victoria and if it was putting a similar lifting of restrictions at risk.
What concerns me, of course, is those numbers. They are very high. But the good news is the number of hospitalisations and deaths at this point in the curve in Victoria is, in fact, much lower than it has been in New South Wales at the same point of the curve. Now, that's a good thing. And that demonstrates that when people get out there and get vaccinated, it makes a genuine difference to the number of hospitalisations and deaths. And it also is a salient message, I think, for those states that might be lagging behind in their vaccinations. So, yes, there is, of course, concern. It's great to see the numbers come back a little bit today. Let's hope that they stay there. But what we want to see is as quick a path to reopening the economy as possible.
Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are available to anyone aged 12 and over through these state-run clinics from today. Is that enough to boost vaccination rates?
Well, I think it's enough to be able to, for those that were hesitating because of the type of vaccine, I know we spoke about vaccine shopping some months ago. For those that were still doing that, that were still waiting that little bit longer, there is no excuse now to go out there and get vaccinated with at least, there's three different vaccines out there to choose from. That's great news.
And the government says this is now possible because of additional supply. Why weren't more vaccines available to Victoria earlier? I mean, Victorians today are looking at New South Wales reopening, and we know that there was a fast tracking of vaccine supply, Pfizer, for instance, in those hotspot areas during the peak of the New South Wales outbreak and lockdown. There's a shorter turnaround, we all know it, because of Pfizer, the 3-week wait instead. Victorians, you're a Victorian senator, look at New South Wales and think, were we shortchanged? Were Victorians shortchanged, Minister?
No, absolutely. No, Victorians are certainly not, were not shortchanged. When, Delta took hold in New South Wales, the Victorian government agreed to allocate a number of additional vaccines specifically to New South Wales. But the good news is now supply is not an issue. Supply hasn't been an issue for some weeks now. In fact, if you go back to the end of December last year, the Morrison government committed to being able to offer vaccines to anybody who wanted one by the end of October. And the terrific news is we're there. Was it a bit of a bumpy ride? Absolutely. We weren't expecting that changed health advice. We weren't expecting those supply chain issues, but they've been overcome and then some. So now it's really a matter of logistics, rolling it out to where the vaccine is needed the most.
New South Wales has started reopening today, as I just referred to, for fully vaccinated residents. Are you confident that won't result in a significant increase in cases that will kind of, again, perhaps, stall the reopening process?
Well, I think Dominic Perrottet has said that he expects cases to rise. But what he has also said is that our hospital system, or the New South Wales hospital system, should be able to cope with that. And I think that that's really the important message, that with those increased numbers of vaccinations, the number of hospitalisations and deaths will eventually diminish. And that's the same in Victoria, which is really good news. So what we want to make sure now is that we start opening the economy. And some great news today coming out around Sydney My Music Bowl and Melbourne Carp, and that is the next step back to normality. But I would like to see a slightly more ambitious target. I think when we hit 70%, according to the national plan, we're supposed to have reduced restrictions. Whereas in Victoria, our plan, the Victorian plan, still has no visitors in the home. It still has limits on travel to regional Victoria. It still has a continuation of the work from home requirement. Now, I don't think that they're low-level restrictions. I feel like in Victoria we've become numb to just how extreme these interventions in our lives are. So I would hope that as we start seeing the number of hospitalisations and deaths decrease, even if the numbers are rising, that we will see our economy open up again.
Just a couple of other issues. Katie Allen, she actually has said, really strong language from her, that she thinks a federal ICAC should be delivered in this parliament. Mm. Do you agree?
Well, we've already committed to introducing legislation for a federal ICAC or a Commonwealth Integrity Commission in this term of government. I suppose what we are adamant about, though, is that there should be procedural fairness, and that, you know, an integrity commission has to engender trust in our political system and in our public service. If it can be used as a political weapon, well, then it actually does the opposite. It diminishes trust. So what we want to make sure is that there is no opportunity for show trials, for instance, or for opportunistic,
Let me politely interrupt.
Political opponents.
In Victoria now, it is the Victorian government or the Labor Party that is embroiled in this current IBAC investigation. In USA, that's a Labor government that's being investigated and looked at in terms of branch stacking. In New South Wales, we know these deals will be looked at and Gladys Berejiklian has stepped down. So we've got two different sides of politics, your side and the Labor side, being investigated by these two different bodies in two different states. Doesn't that just demonstrate that these bodies are necessary, that they don't, you know, play politics, that they pursue the allegations that come to them, and that a federal body is necessary? Don't you think that there is a sort of urgency around doing it federally?
Well, I should point out to you, PK, that both the Victorian IBAC and the New South Wales ICAC were introduced by Liberal governments in both of those states.
So why has your government been dragging its heels then?
But the Commonwealth Integrity Commission is going to be delivered by a coalition government. But we want to make sure that we get the settings right. We know that, for instance, Mark Dreyfus, as the Shadow Attorney General, has referred 10 times coalition MPs to the AFP. And all 10 times, those accusations have found to be baseless and vexatious. So what we don't want is a Commonwealth Integrity Commission that allows that sort of vexatious referrals and then show trials. We want to make sure that it's a Commonwealth Integrity Commission that engenders trust, not diminishes it.
Do you understand, though, why people think, hang on a minute, you've been in government all this time, why haven't you delivered yet?
Well, this has been an ongoing process for the last 2 years, I agree, but it's not an easy issue. In fact, it's quite a complicated one. This legislation has been out for consultation for a considerable period of time, and the government's been considering the results of that consultation. And that consultation went far and wide. You know, it came from academics, it came from experts, it came from lawyers, and all of that has to be considered in the process. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it once, because to not do it right the first time has pretty serious consequences.
Nationals MPs have again suggested caveats to their support for net zero emissions by 2050. Are you confident the coalition will reach an agreement on the path towards net zero?
Well, I think that this conversation has moved a really long way just in the last couple of years. And the announcement by the BCA of the research that they've done, which shows that there is actually a disproportionate benefit for regional Australia in moving to net zero by 2050, I think was very encouraging. It also provided a pathway there where industry can work alongside government because, you know, let's face it, just saying you want to get to net zero by 2050 isn't enough. That's just a slogan. You've got to have a plan to do it, and it's got to be all levels of government and the private sector alongside. So, you know, I am actually very confident that the plan that we take to Glasgow will be a plan that can get us to lower our emissions significantly. Whether it's net zero, well, I think that will be the decision that's made this week. But we know that we have a plan to reduce our emissions through clean energy, through investment in technology, world-leading technology that will actually turn the dial, not just in Australia but around the world. Things like hydrogen and solar and batteries and electric vehicles and more, not increasing taxes and not having a negative effect on our economic outlook for many years to come.
That was Victorian Senator Jane Hume. Let me know what you think. 0418 226 576 is the text line.